Hi guys, Jeff Brunel from LaxAllStars.com coming at you. Today I have had the opportunity to sit down with Commissioner Dave Gross from Major League Lacrosse. We'll be asking Dave an assortment of questions about the 2015 season and the league as a whole. So stay tuned for the entire conversation. Dave, thanks a lot for being with us today. We really appreciate your time and excited to be speaking with you.
Oh, thank you, Jeff. Always a pleasure to have the opportunity to chat directly to the fans.
So I got a big question. This is a hard hitter to start off. 2015 MLL lacrosse season, what color is the ball going to be this year?
The ball will be orange.
Okay. Had to check and verify because you guys tried out the green last year. Is that right?
We tried to, you know, the biggest thing we've got to figure out what's going to be the best color for the viewing experience both in the stadium and at home on television. One of the challenges we have to make the sport bigger is to make it more accessible to fans. And when you've got a small ball moving at the speed that our guys can throw the ball out, it's hard to be picked up, especially when you add in the factor between you know, day games, night games, you're not working against a specific backdrop because you've got all the signage boards that have different colors as well. So we've been actually, you know, working with some industrial lighting companies the past couple of years trying to come up with the color that makes the most sense. And in fact, even this fall, we ended up, shooting film with a lime green ball, with a yellow ball, an orange, a white, and probably two or three other a pink ball. And one thing that we found, even though these were like neon flavor, you ended up having dirt getting on all of them, and the one that held up the best over the longest time was orange. So we are going orange, and because of the outcry, perhaps sacrilegious we were last year of taking it away, we are bringing it back as a grippy ball.
Oh, okay, so the grippy ball will be back, and
the grippy orange. So.
And
the orange is a little bit brighter than what it's been, not nosy. But that's not to say we're not going to try a game this year where we use a yellow ball, because we probably are.
Gotcha. And in the grand scheme of things, ball color, that when it comes to accessibility, it does become a challenge, right? As the MLL continues to grow and wants to expand its audience, what are some of the other challenges that you're facing going into 2015?
Well, I think a challenge that we've had from day one, and it's going to continue, is we still have to get more fans coming to the games, and really following the league, the teams, and the players. I think too many of our fans are casual fans, and meaning that they come to a game when it fits their schedule. They all have a great time, but they haven't made that investment yet emotionally to, I've got to follow and know every little thing about either a player, the team, or the league. And we've got to do a better job of making the league accessible to everybody for that to happen.
When it comes to the broadcasting schedule this year, how will that make an impact?
Yeah, legally I'm not allowed from our partners to say exactly who we're going to be on, but we should be announcing that fairly soon. But what we did try to do is simplify the broadcasting. You know, last year, I think part of, even though every game was broadcast, this game was on this channel, this was on another, this was streamed here. So we've tried to cut down on the number of places you can see the game, but still making every game accessible, to all of our fans, both in broadcast and via streaming. So hopefully it'll be easier for fans this year. But the end result is, all 60 games will be produced for broadcast.
Well, that's great to hear. you know, when it comes to getting players out there, you'd mentioned that, and obviously having the games broadcasted is first and foremost, I think, a great way to expose their talents to fans. There are a lot of players, it seems to me, looking at the 2014 season, who have retired recently. And I wonder, will you be getting those players like Kevin Lavelle to be involved with broadcasts in some way?
Well, there are a lot of great players that retired. And one of the things that was wild, you know, usually when you hear, guys retiring, you're like, oh, well, they played 3-4 years. And you took a look at this crop of players, and this was like version two of guys joining the league. All these guys played 10, 11 years.
Right.
And it was just like, wow. I mean, that is a full pro sports career. And it's amazing, you know, especially it's not easy being a player in the NFL. I don't know if fans can really grasp what these guys have to do when they're not training with their team, you know, year round, and they have to do so much on their own. You know, what it takes to stay competitive with juggling other things. And you know, I just think it's amazing, you know, what guys like Kevin Lavelle and Lee Zink, Ryan Boyle and Greg Bice and all the other guys were able to do. And these guys were mainstays in the league, you know, and they were exemplary both on and off the field. So we want to have ways to keep these guys involved in the league, whether it is through broadcasting, whether it's through them getting involved with teams. You know, one thing that's cool is even when guys' careers come to the close, they're not just walking away from the MLO. We're hearing from guys saying, hey, how do I stay involved? And that's a great thing.
Yeah, it really is, and you know, begs the next question I have for you, which is, when will Major League Lacrosse have a Hall of Fame?
You know, it's something that's actually been voted in by our owners to launch. You know, we're putting the touches on what's the full criteria. You know, how many years did you have to be in the league? Who gets a vote? All those things. You know, I'd like to see. You know, we're going into year 15. I'd like to see by our 17th season, you know, that we have our first Hall of Fame class.
Cool. And so that'd be by 17. And if I recall correctly from when I was watching the championship game in August, I believe that you mentioned the 16th year will include expansion to Atlanta. Is that correct?
Well, we're hoping to add, you know, a team to Atlanta, whether it's in 16, 17, or who knows what. You know, until these deals ever get done, Jeff, they're not done. So, you know, whoever knows. But Atlanta's a great market for the MLO. We've played two games in Atlanta the past 2 years. They've both been very well supported. The communities, you know, behind it. There's a great venue to play at there at Kennesaw State University. So we'll be in Atlanta sooner, you know, rather than later. And I think we've kind of laid out for everyone all the other markets that we want to go to. You know, we look at Dallas and Houston as markets that make a lot of sense for the league. We want to be back out west, you know, with a couple teams in California and Portland and Seattle and Salt Lake City is a market. You know, our goal is to grow this to 16 teams, but, you know, we got to get all the right things in place. And, you know, one of the most important things is finding out, you know, strategies that increase our revenues that make Major League Lacrosse more attractive to, you know, potential investors.
Right. And, you know, can you go in depth a little bit about what it takes to start just a single new franchise? You know, maybe speak toward the Atlanta project that you've been working on a little bit.
Into one, you got to get a sense of whether the market will work, and that's why we've tried before we've done expansion the last few times of playing some games, you know, in market to see, you know, what is the crowd reaction, you know, can we sell tickets, is there local sponsorship, you know, the venue we want to play at, how's it like working with the people in the venue. So we've spent quite a bit of time, you know, in Atlanta the past couple of years, you know, working it, and also, you know, having great partners down there. You know, a lot of stuff we've done in Atlanta, we've worked with LB3 Lacrosse, you know, which is run by Liam Banks, and, you know, we've known Liam for forever, and he's been a great supporter of Major League Lacrosse. And, you know, so you do those things. We have a terrific relationship with the people at Fifth Third Bank Stadium at Kennesaw State University. You know, they've been a tremendous partner of ours. But what also makes something like Atlanta so appealing is the sports commission there, which is run by Dan Corso, has really gotten us in front of a lot of the business leaders. You know, so we know that there'll be the local sponsorship and business support, you know, when a team goes into the market. But it does take time. If you rush it, you know, you can hit some missteps.
How are players impacted by, you know, the rumors of an expansion team popping up in Atlanta, the supplemental draft? Can you explain to me, you know, basically how who employs a player and you know, who's safe and who's not safe each year? How is that decided?
Absolutely, I can get into that. You know, one of the things that I find is just scary is how good the talent is on the field. And you take a look at the number of players who are of an incredibly high caliber that have been unable to really crack a roster for the simple fact that there's only eight teams. And the kids who are coming out of college each year are getting better and better. You know, they train so well. The talent level is outstanding. But it's just hard to get on the field, you know, in this league. These guys are just incredible at what they can do. And, you know, the veteran players are very savvy, and they're now training, you know, year-round. You know, people don't use training camp to get in the shape. They use training camp to win their spot, you know, on the roster. So I think expansion is important for all the players so we can, you know, get more jobs for guys. In terms of who their employer is, Major League Lacrosse is a single entity. Okay. By that, the teams all own the league, and they hire a commissioner, which in this case happens to be me, to run the business end of the league for them. The league employs the players. They're all direct players of the league itself, not of individual franchises. In fact, when you buy a team, technically, you know, often people say, oh, this franchise, they're not a franchise. It's not our setup. What you buy is you buy a piece of the league, and in return, the league gives you the right to a specific market where you can operate on behalf of the league, a team.
Okay.
So the players are employees. Now, when it comes to, you know, we have a salary cap in the league. When it comes to determining the player salary, the league has the final determination on any player's salary. We don't know the players as well as the teams do, so we do ask the teams to recommend a salary to us. And the players, we started this a few years back, the players have like a month period to talk to the teams about what the recommendation that the team's going to put forth, you know, to the league, and then we get the recommendation. And actually, I think in the next week or so, we actually send out the contracts for 2015.
Gotcha. And then do the players get paid only in season, kind of like the NFL?
Yes. Okay. They only get paid during the season, correct. Okay.
And then if they're on the protected list, that means that they cannot be traded? Is that correct?
No. So what happens? We love our lists here at Major League Lacrosse. So let's just start at the end of the season. The season ends, and a month later, towards the end of September, the teams have to submit to the league a 23-man protected list. And the reason for this, you start your season with 25 players, but then you get players that are injured. So that can, you can have a guy in injured reserve all year. So you, let's say you balloon up to 28 players from that. Mm-hmm. Then you've got your college draft picks. Well, if you don't activate them, you can get up to another 8 players. Then there might be some guys for some reason that didn't play during the season, who didn't, either didn't sign their contract or just never showed up. Those are called did not reports. That can add on. So instead of having your 25-man roster, some teams end the year with over 30 guys. Mm-hmm. We don't want teams to be able to hoard players. So that's why we say, hey, we want guys to have as big an opportunity as possible. End September, you submit your 23-man protected, and everyone else goes into the player pool. And they sit in the player pool, and then in December, we have what we call the supplemental draft. And those are guys that were released that weren't protected as part of the 23, plus other guys who, for whatever reason, weren't in the league the previous year, who registered during the offseason to get in. And then early December, we do the supplemental draft, and that gets teams up to 35 players heading into training camp. Teams can also then, after the supplemental draft, go into that player pool and pick up players. But what couldn't happen, so let's hypothetically say, Jeff, you know, you're not in the player pool, and a team has said to you, you know, keep quiet, and you know, we're going to pick you up in June. Well, unless you've registered and told everyone, it's my intention that I want to be part of this league, a team can't do that. You've got to enter the league through some kind of a draft.
I see. Okay.
So after supplemental, we then have in January our college draft, which is 8 rounds. So we'll be picking 64 players, you know, in that draft. And then those players stay with the team until they're activated. Some years a rookie might not get activated, but the team can have them practice and you know, they can get a look and see of the player. And then we also have another list that we put out in right after Memorial Day, where guys who were drafted have an opportunity then to register to be picked up to be in the league if you were a graduating college senior. Got because it. For our college draft, because they still have college eligibility, the players don't register to be in that draft. That they are just selected.
Got it. Okay. So to back up to the 23-man protected list, in the case of Paul Rabil with the Cannons, he was on that list, and then. And even though he's on that list, he's still allowed, if he'd like to say, request a trade, or a team could come toward the Cannons and try to, you know, deal a trade, right? And that's kind of that's what happened this December.
Right. There's very few periods during the year where trades can't happen. I think it's after week 10, we go into a trading freeze where teams can't trade players, and that holds until just after the championship game.
Gotcha. So, like, behind the scenes, you know, of this Paul Rabil trade that just went down, obviously there are more players that went to new homes through that trade, but Paul's been the big name headlining it all. I'm curious to know, from your perspective, being one of the guys behind the scenes working the deal, did it feel like a blockbuster trade to you? Did it feel like a big deal for the league?
You know, the league isn't really involved in trades. I mean, we have one function. We approve the trades. You know, sometimes a team will ask the league for an opinion, and we'll give it, but for the most part, we don't know what's going on. We're more in the dark than the public until we get the paperwork to review. Did it feel like a blockbuster trade? Absolutely. Anytime you take a player who's had the career, you know, that Paul's had, that Max Seabold's had, and you swap them on teams and you have, you know, first round draft picks moving like they were, those are big deals. The only trade I ever remember being bigger was the first time we did expansion. So back in 2006, I think it was right on the eve of training camp, you had 24 players and or draft picks move between you know, 6 different teams, which is just, you know, our heads were spinning over that one. Again, I think that was a function of the first time we ever expanded.
Right, and that was players moving across the country, right?
guys go Denver and LA and San Fran and Chicago and all those other components to it. Yeah. So that was just, you know, and that trade, in fact, I don't think you'll remember, that included the number one pick, which turned out to be Joe Walters. Billy Mello was part of that deal. So just a ton of talent moved around at that point, and that was exciting. But this one, you know, this is the first time you've ever had a veteran of the number of years of Paul go in such a big blockbuster. I guess the closest comparison to this one was back in before the 2003 season, when Casey Powell was traded from Rochester, traded to Rochester in exchange for Brian Daugherty, who went to Long Island, and Doc led Long Island to their second championship in the goal. You know, those were two superstar players that got moved, in the early years of the league. But this one, it's definitely huge, and it's exciting for the fans. I think the fans want to see a level of player movement, and this was big.
Yeah, no, it certainly was. And it's funny you mentioned Casey Powell being traded in 2003, and here we are, 2015, and he's still one of the best players in the league.
Well, you know, I talked earlier about how hard it is to get on the field and how tough it is for guys to stay competitive. But you look last year, you know, the two oldest guys in the league between Casey Powell and John Grant Jr., mm-hmm. you know, had two of the biggest seasons. You know, John won the championship with Denver and was just, you know, phenomenal, during the postseason. And Casey was our league MVP. But what I found actually more shocking than Casey winning the MVP last year was it was his first MVP in the league.
That is shocking. I did not know that. I just would have figured he's been MVP before, you know. But looking at Casey and John and seeing them play this year or in 2014, what really stood out to me was their leadership styles, and specifically, you know, on the field and coming off of it for timeouts and stuff. Those guys are the first guys to the huddle. You know, they lead by example with a lot of what they do, and I think that, from my opinion, speaks toward their longevity in the league. I'm curious to hear from you. Given the big number of young players that are currently in the MLL, how does the league prevent turnover?
Again, with eight teams, you're going to have it. Guys are going to get forced out just by younger guys coming in. When you join the league, your rookie year, you're probably in the best shape of your life coming off your senior season.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to stay in. It depends on what job you're doing. When we started the league, about 40% of the players had what I call a Wall Street type job. We're under 10% now. These guys are finding a way to cobble together a living in the sport, and that's helping them stay in the MLL longer than in the past. But still, with eight teams, you've got so many great players fighting, yeah. You know, for very few spots. But the easiest way, the simplest way for us to get guys playing longer is for us to be able to afford to pay them more money. But the way we're going to be able to afford that is we've got to find a way to make broadcasting profitable for the league, and we've got to sell more tickets, and that'll help bring in more sponsorship as well. So it's not going to be overnight, but you know, we'd love to have these guys as full-time players. We'd grow much faster as a league if we got to that level. And there are things that we're seeing on the broadcast front that there are going to be opportunities in some non-traditional ways, to drive revenue, and we're going to look to try and take advantage of those things in the coming years.
Well, that's really exciting to hear. Do you think that there is room for Major League Lacrosse on SportsCenter and on ESPN and in Sports Illustrated? And what is it going to take from the players and the fans to get lacrosse to that point?
The whole sport's got to get bigger for it to happen. happen on a consistent basis. You know, you take a look at, let's just say, college football. I don't watch a minute of college football, yet I knew who Andrew Luck was when he was coming into the league, or RG3, and you know about all the problems the quarterback at Florida State has had, or allegedly has had. When it comes to lacrosse, a lot of these guys are coming to the league, and they're great players, but no one knows who they are. And part of it is, you know, college football teams are packing 80 to 100,000 plus into stands, and you know, we're lucky to be getting, you know, 3,000 to 5,000 fans in the stands. So the whole game's got to get bigger, and the bigger the game gets, you know, it'll just keep mushrooming. Right now, it's very much a participant sport, and not enough of a spectator sport, which is surprising, because to go watch lacrosse at either the college level or the pro level, it's incredibly affordable compared to other forms of sports entertainment. The access you can get to the players is tremendous. Again, both college and pro, and it's wholesome. It's not tainted like some of these other things are. So, and I do believe if people really said, I really want to get behind and support this, they'd be very happy. A story I love to tell. Years ago, a buddy of mine worked for one of the pro baseball teams. I used to say what the team was, but I got in trouble for saying it, so I keep my mouth shut. Just the pro team, and I was asking him about, you know, certain players, and his response was, jerk, 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 total jerk. And he finally said, admire these guys from afar, because if you ever got to know them, you would only be disappointed. When it comes to Major League Lacrosse and our players, I say the exact opposite. These guys are great guys. I mean, we were talking about some of the guys who just retired. Right. I mean, Ryan Boyle, Kevin Lavelle, Greg Bice. I mean, I could sit here and talk for hours about things they do that have nothing lacrosse related, but that they, you know, on the field, but what they do to help grow the sport and what kind of people they are. And again, you can go on and on. The league's just littered with these kind of guys. So I think the more people we get to know about our players, the more they'd want to support what they're doing, because it really is refreshing who some of these guys are.
It is, and there's just more of them coming into the league. You've got the draft next week. Which players on the list are you excited to get into the league?
Well, you know, everything I hear about this year's draft, it's an incredibly deep draft. It might not have as many superstars as some other, but there's just a lot of really, really strong talent. Obviously, you know, who doesn't want to see what Lyle Thompson can do as a pro? You know, and I guess the big question that's going to happen, not just with Lyle, but with some of the other guys this year, it's a very heavy draft of players that probably want to play indoor, play in the NLL as well. And, you know, we have such an extensive overlap right now between the two leagues that I think teams got to look and say, does it make sense for me to draft a player high who I might have either for just this one season or in ongoing seasons only have for less than half the year? And that's, you know, it's an unfortunate reality of what our teams have to consider because of the overlap.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. And that's just one of the challenges. I mean, the NLL is a separate entity, right? And it's essentially a different version of the game. And have you guys the two leagues come together to talk about scheduling at all?
We do, and I think there's this big misconception out there that the leagues don't like each other, and that's nothing to be further from the truth. You know, George Daniels, the commissioner of the NLL, if ever I have a question, you know, George is more than happy to answer and help me out, and hopefully he feels the same way. You know, the Mammoth at their game recently just honored the Denver Outlaws, and they brought the trophy to it. So I think that this notion of bad blood, it's an antiquated notion. But there is a problem of we have very different business interests. And our interests need to both be on what's best for the individual leagues. Both leagues have their issues. So right now, a lot of our business interests do not align. And where they don't align is the NLL feels, and I feel weird speaking for them, but, you know, that they sell better tickets later in the year in the, you know, than around the holidays. And so they don't want to start in be it November or December. We've been moving earlier as we want to be more in line with the traditional lacrosse season and be done, you know, before college football, and we play on so many college campuses before the students are back on, where we don't have as much access, you know, to the fields that we play in. So as we've shifted earlier, they've shifted later, and I think now if you play in the indoor championship game, you wouldn't join your team till week 9 or 10. And you know, it's just a problem. But I don't consider them the bad guy or us the bad guy. We're just looking out for each team's interest. And you know, if there was a way to solve this, where you know, if we all had enough revenue, we both be happy to work it out. Because if you look at it, if we could ever line it up properly, you get 10 months of content. And that's a powerful thing. But you know, right now, from where we both think selling tickets for our respective leagues are, we don't have that symmetry.
Gotcha. Maybe it's just a matter of time, you know.
It is, and we have dialogue. You know, we didn't really chat about scheduling so much this year, but a year and a half ago, actually two years ago, January, we sat down and talked about it. Is there a way around this? And you know, we both shared the direction that each league was going. Again, the communication lines are always open. Neither league is doing anything to the other out of malice. It's just out of, you know, the league's interest.
Gotcha. Well, hey, going back to the draft, is the draft going to be any different this year than it was last in terms of the actual event and how it's done? I happened to have the chance to attend last year, so I was curious.
Well, no, I think they're going to keep it the same as last year. I think that limits the amount of time I get on the broadcast, which is good for everybody. You know, I think after a couple rounds, you know, they'll just run a ticker or announce the picks from the broadcast to the people watching, and I'll announce it to the room instead of cutting back to me every 2 seconds, which, again, as I said, I think adds nothing to the broadcast. But yeah, we've got Quentin Evan doing the draft. It'll be streaming live on ESPN3,
okay.
Whereas last year it was on our YouTube channel. You know, we find on 3 we get a bigger audience, so you know, we'll have it there, and we're excited about it and looking forward to it. You know, but it's challenging for our GMs. And I think what makes it cool is you get a lot of players drafted in the later rounds who do make a big impact in the league. It's not nothing. No one's a short bet in the first or second round.
Right, right. No, it should be very exciting. I think that this is just from my perspective, running LAX All-Stars, 2015 MLL season already has kind of a turning point feeling to it. It feels like it's going to be a big year for you guys. So we're excited to be following it and cover it as much as we can. Dave, as we close up here, I want to ask if you have anything else from your end that you'd like to share with the LAXAllStars.com audience and the lacrosse community in general.
Yeah, the biggest thing, Jeff, that I always just want to impress upon people, because I always hear this where people say, what's it going to take for the sport to get bigger? And the way the sport's going to get bigger is if, you know, people involved in the game go and watch the game and at both the pro level and the college level. You know, we got to get these crowds bigger and bring some non-lacrosse friends. It still shocks me when I look at, like, the NCAA finals. You know, 99 99% of that crowd is a lacrosse crowd, whereas when you look at the NCAA basketball finals, you know, probably 10% is a basketball crowd and 90% is a corporate crowd. You know, we've got to make it where the casual fan and that corporate fan, you know, feel the connection to the sport and say, this is where I want to spend my entertainment dollar. So the more everyone can just be that Pied Piper and support what's going on, watch the games on TV, go attend the games, you know, the faster, you know, this thing is going to grow. And once it's the tipping point, then it just, you know, takes off.
Yeah, couldn't agree with you more. Well, appreciate your time today, Dave. I know you're a busy guy and you've got a big week ahead of you next week in Baltimore. Best of luck, and thanks again for your time. I appreciate the conversation.